This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
You see something broken? Fix it. And then you're the person who fixes it. Like, good for you, man. It's like you got something to do. Really? And then people think, hey, you're the guy that fixed that. Maybe you could fix this. And this, and this, and this, and then you fix things, and your life just expands.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Jordan Peterson, clinical psychologist and author of three books, including 12 Rules for Life and Antidote to Chaos. He also served as the commencement speaker at this year's 2022 commencement ceremony at Hillsdale College. We'll hear more excerpts from that address later on in today's program. First, we welcome back Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. You can find him on Twitter at CarringtonAM, where recent writings are linked. Dr. Carrington, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We take another walk through a recent Supreme Court opinion today as we look at Kennedy v. Bremerton School District, a religious liberty type question in front of the Supreme Court this past term. What, in fact, was the specific question in front of the court in this Kennedy case?
Right. So the thing to know is that the school fired an assistant football coach for praying at the 50-yard line, and the question was, did firing him for that violate his First Amendment rights on two counts, the free exercise of religion and the freedom of speech? And so the court was taking up both questions there.
Something I think we need to make clear before we begin digging in a bit deeper is the misinterpretation in some of the writings about this case since the opinion's been released. There have been a lot of places, a lot of outlets, if you read, essentially they're saying this coach was disciplined because he was leading groups of students in prayer at the 50-yard line after games. And that was true at one point. But that's not what the case is about, because he had already changed his behavior before the discipline took effect. Tell us a little bit more about what this case really is about and the circumstances surrounding it.
Yeah, there were three activities that he engaged in originally: locker room prayer before a game, a set of motivational speeches, often with religious themes, in addition to prayers at the 50-yard line, and then just him praying himself at the 50-yard line quietly without asking anyone to join him or stopping anyone, just doing the prayer himself. He willingly gave up the first two and said, I'm not going to continue the locker room prayer or the motivational speeches with religious content. What he refused to stop doing was his own quiet prayer at the 50-yard line after the game. And after he had done that for several weeks in a row, the school fired him for continuing that practice and that practice alone. So that's something that, you're right, has been a lot of misinformation about what this case was actually focused on. It was not talking about the constitutionality of coach-led prayers in the locker room. It was not talking about the motivational speeches, just can he pray at the 50-yard line himself.
Was there any evidence brought forward in the case that there was coercion on behalf of the coach that students must or should join him or take part in these prayers?
No, and part of the evidence for that is when he prayed, most of his students weren't able to join him. It was when they were in the end zone singing the fight song or doing other activities. In fact, most of who joined him when he had anyone join him were private adult citizens or players from the other team. Hard to coerce someone from another team because you have no power over them.
Uh-huh.
So really no evidence here on what the court was focused on, that there was any sort of coercion of any kind going on.
How did the court in this case, and this is a Gorsuch opinion, how did they separate the pregame talks that he gave, which could be construed as being part of a coach's job responsibilities, from the private prayer that he was engaged in following the conclusion of the contest?
Well, they did it on two levels. One was factual, which was to say he discontinued that practice, so we don't even have to decide that question.
Mm-hmm.
It's not before us. It's moot because it was discontinued. But the other was to say that the practice we are talking about, praying at the 50-yard line, that, yes, there are limits on what a state employee can do as part of their job, but they don't shed their constitutional rights as private citizens by being hired by the state. And the line is what he did, praying at the 50-yard line, reasonably part of his job as a coach? And the court said to say that would be basically to make his entire life his job,
mm-hmm.
that there has to be some element of private life, that at that same time other coaches were allowed to check their cell phones, they were allowed to talk with friends. So he was engaging in one of a series of private activities.
Talking with Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics, about the Kennedy ruling from the Supreme Court. Does this opinion give us a new or revised framework for interpreting the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment?
Right, and of course the Establishment Clause says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. It's been read as saying that at least you can't establish a governmental church. And I think it solidified what's been an emerging standard over the last few years, maybe even the last decade. And that is to say that what we look to is not a complete separation of religion and the public sphere, but we look to historical practice to say no coercion, but was coercion understood to mean historically? What was allowed, what was not allowed, and how do we analogize that to today? So it's very much grounded in what was the practice over the course of our history at the time that the First Amendment came into being. And so much like a number of the cases this term, text and history mm-hmm. became the focus in a way that it hasn't been for clauses like this in the past.
I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but one of the reasons there's some confusion about the case is because of the dissent, which was penned by Justice Sotomayor. There's the use of a picture in the dissent that is not representative of what the question was in the case. I think the very beginning of the dissent talks about how the coach was allowed to pray at the center of a school activity. And as we talked about, this is post-game. The students are singing a fight song at the other end of the field. The center of the field is not the center of attention at the end of a football game. Is the dissent in this case really even trying to answer the question that is at hand?
I think that's a really good point, that in many ways this seems like an expression of frustration about the direction of the court on religious liberty questions in general, and this wasn't the only religious liberty question. Carson v. Macon, the main school funding one, mm-hmm. as well, where the same justices were frustrated. No, and that's where it makes the dissent weaker. It makes it weaker when you're creating straw men. And I think that was a massive problem in this case. The pictures were misleading. The discussion of what actually went on was misleading. And that makes the reasoning inherently flawed and therefore does actually the dissent a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
It does those who are wanting to argue that opinion a disservice because if you base it on faulty facts, how can you trust the reasoning itself?
Final question, bigger picture, as you alluded to there, this Kennedy case and the school funding case in this term both continue a streak of good news for both religious liberty and protected speech cases, too, in front of the Supreme Court.
Right. I mentioned Carson v. Macon, also Espinoza versus Montana, a very similar school funding case about religious schools. And what you're really seeing is the court clarifying its establishment and free exercise clause jurisprudence and also strengthening religious liberty protections to make sure that religious persons and groups are treated the same, on the same terms as non, in the public sphere, when the government chooses to give benefits, when it chooses to dispense privileges. And I think that that's going to only be more and more important if we are moving toward a more secular society, mm-hmm. that those persons with religious beliefs are afforded all of the protections that the Constitution gives them.
Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics here at Hillsdale College. Find him on Twitter at CarringtonAM, where his latest writings are linked. Dr. Carrington, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks so much for having me.
Up next, Noah Rothman joins us. His brand new book, The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
At Shasta Regional Medical Center, we're specialists in emergency care with the experience and training to deliver expert diagnosis and treatment to all emergency patients. Shasta Regional Medical Center is certified as an advanced primary stroke facility and is one of the nation's 50 top cardiovascular hospitals and is a fully accredited chest pain center. In an emergency when every minute has meaning and every second counts, choose Shasta Regional Medical Center, your choice for emergency care. Shasta Regional Medical Center, caring for our community when minutes matter.
Are you new to crypto? It can leave you feeling unsure of what to do. Help is available. From getting started to securing your cryptos, you don't need to go it alone. Bitcoin 530 will take you by the hand to help you move forward with your crypto journey. Schedule a free consultation with Bitcoin 530 at bitcoin530.io or give them a call at 530-324-5175. That's bitcoin530.io.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change with our extensive training program. It's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians. So you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew. This month's Cigar of the Humidor is La Unica Dominican Primeros, premium shade-grown Connecticut wrappers combined with a long filler blend of aged Cuban seed Dominican tobaccos, providing a smooth, mellow to medium-bodied experience. It's a rich and balanced selection with subtle hints of nuts, cream, and fruit. La Unica Dominican Primeros, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Tickets for Axiom Repertory Theater's summer season are on sale now, starting with Neil Simon's hilarious Chapter 2, July 15th through August 26th, followed by the aggressively outrageous musical hit Ruthless, July 22nd through August 25th, and finally, Roe, a timely look at the landmark 1973 case Roe v. Wade, running August 5th through the 27th. Don't miss Axiom Repertory Theater's outstanding summer season. Get your tickets now at the box office, 2613 Bocelli Lane, or online at axreptheater.com.
Calm. 100 years ago, Simpson University began with the promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with the promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Send us your thoughts and feedback via email at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Noah Rothman. He is Associate Editor of Commentary Magazine, author of Unjust, and the new book, The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. Noah, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The new Puritans, who are they, and what do they want?
They want a homogenized environment. They are very much, in fact, like the old Puritans, insofar as they cannot countenance the sort of diversity that used to typify the left. And when we think about the left, we think about what we grew up with. Everybody who's listening to this probably for their whole adult lives remember the left as being permissive to a degree that licenses self-destructive behavior, licentious, libertine, genuinely interested in diversity in all forms. But the first of those forms to fall out of favor was diversity of thought and opinion. And all the others have subsequently followed along. The new left has discovered a very old form of morality that was native to the progressive cause. As Democrats have increasingly aligned themselves more with progressive values and less with liberalism, classical or otherwise, they have begun to adopt its conceits. Progressivism's chief conceit is that the world can be perfected through human labor. And if the world can be perfected through human labor, you are obliged morally to engage in the project. You must work towards perfecting it. And increasingly what we come to see from this movement is that the work, the outward displays of labor, and the discomfort associated with those displays marks you as a morally upstanding and righteous human being. So yes, when we think about the sort of people who impose moral frameworks on your life, we used to think about the right. That is no longer the case, and in fact, we're seeing something much older and more familiar in the form of a left-wing moral crusade that is being championed primarily by youngish activists on the progressive left.
Noah, in the piety chapter, you discuss the canceling of classic literature, be it Huckleberry Finn or To Kill a Mockingbird or The Odyssey. These are important questions for us at Hillsdale in the world of academia. What is wrong from the New Puritan perspective of reading and appreciating, reading and learning, or even from their perspective, reading and pointing out mistakes and learning from them? What is the problem there?
So what they see, what the New Puritan and the puritanically inclined progressive sees in these works of classic literature is not a historical analysis or a study of a time and place in human history that is no more. They don't see learning from it. They see you steeping yourself in the kind of the theories and bigotries that were pervasive at the time. And so, therefore, you're internalizing them. And this is a very puritanical impulse because art in the puritanical framework, the old 16th century, early 17th century puritanical thought, maintained that art was generally a form of idleness, and idleness is one of the highest sins. Therefore, art must have a purpose. It must comment on the today. It must be contemporary. It must have didactic morals that you're bludgeoned with because they don't actually trust you to internalize these lessons through osmosis or anything with any sort of nuance. You have to be led by the nose to the preferred conclusions because you cannot be trusted with your own thoughts. And that extends certainly to classical literature and the sort of literature that now finds itself being de-emphasized mm-hmm. by progressives in literary fields who are dictating the curricula for particularly students, but also in colleges as well.
The austerity chapter in The Rise of the New Puritans gets into ESPN, the politics seeping into their coverage. Why did professional sports organizations react in the way that they did to pressure from these New Puritans when, if we look at it, it's highly unlikely those New Puritans enjoyed the product they had in the first place?
Well, I mean, part of this is also a deeply puritanical impulse, which finds its roots in the 16th century, the early 17th century. But insofar as sports are, one, violent. They are a display of pride, a sort of pridefulness that is contemptuous of what should be a person's place in the world, which is to be very humble and generally mournful of their odious circumstances. But lastly, and perhaps most importantly, sports are just not important. Sports were an obstacle to enjoying the fullness of your potential because they distracted from studies, for example. And we see this quite a bit in, as you said, ESPN, but also progressive activism around sports recently, in part because sports just aren't important. They're not important compared with racial dynamics in America, compared with income inequality in America, all the problems of life that will never go away because life is going to be associated with struggle, hardship, and challenges. But nevertheless, your efforts to escape that kind of problems, those kind of problems, to fail to dwell on them to a degree that makes you, drives you absolutely mad, is a sin.
Noah Rothman is with us. The Rise of the New Puritans is his book, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. The Fear of God chapter contains, I think, one of the biggest points in the book, one of the most important points. The notion that there is no such thing as private life animated the Puritan movement, you write, and later quote George McKenna, there is no such thing as a private sin. Each sin adversely affects the community. Why is it for the new Puritans that corporations can't simply sell us things? Why can individuals, why are individuals not allowed to have private moments or private opinions or private thoughts?
Right. So the sin is not something that exists in isolation or in a vacuum. The sin and the sinner and the environment within which the sin is committed are all part of the same continuum. McKenna, who's the author of a very influential book on Puritanism in America and the origins of American patriotism, also identified one of the main distinguishing characteristics of the puritanically inclined, which is this tendency towards what he called anxious introspection. He defined it as the devil's works are not just external. Ultimately, we are saved or damned by what is inside of us. And each sin adversely affects the commonwealth. And so to that degree, we can see in that chapter, which focuses almost exclusively on hobbies, perhaps the most anodyne, banal preoccupations you can occupy yourself with, all of which, to the individuals who are steeped in this milieu, have a dimension that is rooted in America's sins of its birth. Holidays, the celebration of Christmas and the winter solstice and Halloween and Thanksgiving, all of which accentuate the worst aspects of American life. Outdoor pastimes, jogging, gardening, bird watching, car culture, and even to a certain degree, video games and vaping and smoking. These are the sort of things that also preoccupied Puritans, in part because they encouraged idleness. And idleness, as we said, is one of the gravest possible sins. And it also encourages licentiousness and liberty and sort of a lack of appreciation for and understanding for your loathsome circumstances. Again, it is escapism, and escapism is a fundamental abdication of your responsibility to make for a more just world.
Noah Rothman, associate editor at Commentary Magazine, author of Unjust, and the new book, The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun. Noah, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history at Hillsdale, tells us about the founding of Rome. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hey, KCNR listeners, it's Nathan with the Reading Civic Auditorium. Have you been to readingcivic.com lately? I want to shout out huge thanks to all of our patrons throughout the North State who buy tickets to our shows and attend the valuable community events that happen in the auditorium every year. These past 10 years of momentum have been absolutely incredible. Thanks to all of you. Your support and confidence in Advanced Reading has made the impossible possible. As a community who knows how to pull together and show ourselves strong, we have successfully attracted high-quality entertainers and major concert promoters back into the building and put your Reading Civic Auditorium on the map once again. Arts and entertainment culture is thriving, and we have much to celebrate. Never miss a show again. Visit ReadingCivic.com and sign up for our emails for exclusive pre-sale access. We have an unbelievable lineup with new shows being added all the time. Hit ReadingCivic.com today. You'll be glad you did. Shows are always more fun at the Civic.
Tutankhamun, Wonderful Things, Treasures from the Pharaoh's Tomb is open now through September 5th in Reading at Turtle Bay Museum, featuring authentic reproductions of King Tut's ancient Egyptian treasures. Presented by Senator Kay Maurice and Marianne Johannesson in association with the Museum of Ancient Wonders. This exhibition is included with paid park admission, free for Turtle Bay members. Tutankhamun, Wonderful Things, Treasures from the Pharaoh's Tomb, open now through September 5th at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We say thank you to our listeners in South Carolina on WAIM Radio, 1230 AM in Anderson, South Carolina. Thank you for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined by Dr. Ken Calvert, Professor of Ancient History here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Calvert, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
Recent online course people can find at online.hillsdale.edu, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Republic. And we'll take a look today at one of the courses inside and give a little bit of insight and perhaps convince people and encourage people to go find the rest over at the website. And this is early. This is the founding of Rome we want to discuss today. Before we get to the founding, why is this important? Why should people be concerned and study the Roman Republic?
Right. Founding fathers, Jefferson, Washington, Adams, they all had studied the Roman Republic. They'd studied a variety of free societies across history because as they were sitting down to establish the Constitution, and even before that, in the midst of the Revolution, they had been deeply concerned and studying these ancient societies. And so to understand our Constitution, to understand who we are at our very foundation, our very roots, it's important because our founders thought it was important to study the Roman Republic. Absolutely.
So was Rome a republic at its founding?
No. At its in the 8th century, somewhere around 753 BC. It was just a little village in a valley surrounded by seven hills along the Tiber River, really controlled by the Etruscans. The Etruscans were the great power in the region. There were some other tribes, the Sabines and the Samnites, but really at the founding, they were controlled by the Etruscans and for a time ruled over by Etruscan kings.
Who were the Romans then before they were Romans? Were they Greek?
It's hard to say. They were part of the Latin tribes up and down really the western coast or southwestern coast of Italy. How they were related to the tribes around them is difficult to suss out because we just simply don't have, you know, enough information. They were not Greeks. The Greeks were more in the south. In fact, the Greeks had created a huge number of colonies in the southern part of Italy and on the eastern coast of Sicily. The most important of those colonies in Sicily was Syracuse, founded by Corinth. And then on the Italian peninsula, you have Tarentum and Posidonia and things like that, but the most famous of them being Naples. And actually the modern word Naples comes from the Greek Neapolis, or new city-state. And so the name itself means colony. And so the Romans really are in the thick of a variety of other tribes, a variety of other cultural influences. They're the Gauls or the Celts way up north, and they're considered by everybody to be the barbarians in the region. You know, you don't trust those Gauls. But the Romans, when you look at the map and you look at the 8th century, you don't suspect that these are going to be the people who rise to power in the Mediterranean. There are greater forces around them, the Etruscans to the north, the Greeks to the south, and then, of course, in North Africa and controlling Spain and Sicily and much of the western part of the Mediterranean are the Carthaginians, who inhabit a colony. In fact, the word Carthage, also in Phoenician, means colony. It was a colony of the city of Tyre on the eastern coast of the Mediterranean. How the Romans did it, that's one of the questions we're asking in this class. Right. In the first couple of lectures, you know, we look at, all right, how did this group, you know, conquer the entire Mediterranean?
Tell us a bit more about the history of the Mediterranean and how Rome becomes shaped by what came before and what was happening at the time.
Right. So when we look at the Mediterranean world in the 8th century B.C. down to the 6th century B.C. when Rome establishes its republic, there's all kinds of activity, mostly trade. And trade from Spain in the west to the eastern coast of the Mediterranean, what we historians call the Levant, to Egypt and to the ancient Near East, there is all kinds of trade going back and forth. So the Greeks will get involved in this as they come to power. The Romans are kind of in the midst of all of this, but not a big player. The Etruscans, we have good evidence that the Etruscans are involved in this trade. So Alexander the Great, as I mentioned, he conquers the Phoenicians and establishes what we call Hellenistic culture, Greek and native cultures around the eastern coast of the Mediterranean. And again, establishes an opportunity for the Romans to rise to power because the Phoenician world is gone. The Egyptians have a great deal of grain, and they provide all kinds of grain for neighbors in the Mediterranean, and ultimately the Romans get involved in that as well. So the Romans will rely upon Egyptian grain in their rise to power as a republic. It's a fascinating network that begins to develop. We often think of these ancient societies and the Republic as somehow, or the Romans, as somehow distinct from everyone else. Mm-hmm. We have to remember that there is a very complicated network of these city-states and of these people groups all around the Mediterranean. We often think, too, that they automatically viewed one another as enemies, but not necessarily. The Egyptians had an ancient, revered culture, and their neighbors, though sometimes enemies with them, still were highly respectful of Egyptian culture and its antiquity, and particularly its ability to produce grain. One thing that the Romans were very good at in many ways is once they conquered someone, they didn't suppress them. They didn't make them into they didn't try to erase the culture. Let's put it that way. They often enslaved some of the people they defeated. But they did not try to erase cultures. And there is a kind of willingness within the Roman world to adopt new gods, to adopt new religious practices. It takes time among the Romans, but they do some of this in the early days. And that's one way in which the Romans came to power.
Talking with Dr. Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College, about the founding of Rome. How did the Roman Republic begin to then shape the history of the Mediterranean?
Right. So across the Mediterranean, you have this Roman influence. Now, one of the questions that ancient historians always ask, did the Romans conquer the Greeks? Or did the Greeks conquer the Romans? Because Rome, in a series of five wars, did conquer Greece and the Aegean world. The whole Greek world came under their power. But militarily, perhaps Rome conquered Greece. But the Greek culture, its language, its philosophy, its science, its art and architecture, its theater, so much, really became part of the Roman world. And there are many historians who talk about the Romans as being Hellenistic, that is Greek culture with native culture, and so you see this in Rome. And this idea of bringing in Greek culture, appreciating all of these things Greek and all of this Hellenic culture, it is what unifies Rome with much of the East. And then begins to establish culture in the West as well. Now, their Latin roots as well, the agrarian, republican, digging in the earth, you know, these people are farmers, they spread that as well. And the idea of being law-abiding, again, as I mentioned before, of being pious to the gods, you know, all of this is part of what the Romans are establishing throughout, but also in the West, and primarily in the West, when you look at Gaul or Spain or North Africa, or up into, later on, up into Britain, there is an orderliness, rule of law, roads, peaceful roads, peaceful waterways that the Romans establish. It's quite a remarkable region, quite a remarkable empire that they develop. Yeah.
You can find out more about the founding of Rome and a whole lot more on our online course, online.hillsdale.edu. It's The Rise and Fall of the Roman Republic, taught in part by Dr. Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Calvert, thanks again joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Scott, it's been a privilege. Thank you.
Up next, we hear excerpts from this year's commencement address at Hillsdale College from Jordan Peterson. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Why choose proven quality sleep from Sleep Number? Because our Sleep Number 360 smart bed is really smart. It senses your movement and automatically adjusts to help keep you both comfortable. Plus, it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. It's even smart enough to know exactly how long, how well, and when you slept. Our smart sleepers get 28 minutes more restful sleep per night. Sleep Number takes care of the science. All you have to do is sleep. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number 360 Special Edition smart bed, queen, now only $14.99. Only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Owens is a proud sponsor of Reading Colt 45's baseball. Owens provides top-quality respiratory products and services throughout the North State and Northern Nevada. Products include oxygen therapy featuring the small and portable oxygen concentrators, CPAP machines, and a team focused specifically on providing ongoing CPAP supplies to help you get the best sleep possible. Owens has been in business since 1979 and has been Joint Commission accredited since 2003, allowing them to care for patients in our community when they need them the most. Contact Owens at 1-800-MY-OWENS. That's 1-800-696-9367. Whether you are traveling to or from the lake or river or on vacation, even off to a barbecue this summer, spruce up your ride at Quick and Clean Car Wash at Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading. With car wash packages starting at only $9. Or buy 5 car wash coupons, get one free. Or buy 10 car wash coupons and get 3 free. Stop by Quick and Clean Car Wash at Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading. Quick and clean.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW Renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
And you have another opportunity now to be the next iteration of yourself that you can be. And at a crossroads, you know, the metaphor works because you make a decision. You go one direction or another. And there's an old blues idea that you meet the devil at the crossroads. And I always wondered why that was. I thought it through. It's a really compelling idea. You know, it's an image that has a good narrative fit, and it sticks in your memory once you hear it. Why do you meet the devil at the crossroads at midnight? Maybe that's when you examine your conscience, or it examines you. And then you might ask, well, why do you meet the devil at the crossroads? And the answer is, most fundamentally, because when you come to a place in your life where you have to make a choice, and I think this is actually true of every choice we ever make, but it's more evident when the choice is more weighty, let's say. As the choices that lay themselves out now in front of you are weighty, you aim up or down. And there is always an agent of temptation at every choice point enticing you to aim down. And I thought a lot about what aiming down means, and so I'll run through that for a bit. The spirit of temptation manifests itself, for example, in the story of Cain and Abel. And so Cain falls prey to temptation, and God bluntly informs him when he complains about his fate that the temptation was freely chosen and that he could have done differently and better. And Cain becomes, this is in the aftermath of the improper sacrifices that he makes. The sacrifices that he makes that are not everything they could be, they're not in the service of the highest good, that are deceptive and arrogant simultaneously, because when we make improper sacrifices, we believe in the deepest part of ourselves that we've pulled one over God. And I suggest that that's a temptation you might want to avoid, that presumption.
Dr. Jordan Peterson continues his commencement address this year at Hillsdale College, telling us faith is a form of courage.
One of the things I've thought a lot about in relationship to faith, you know, we have this idea, it's not a good idea, And it's certainly an idea for which religious people are often pilloried, that faith means the sacrifice of reason and the willingness to believe things that are patently not true. And when religious people debate scientists, they're often sort of hung out to dry on exactly those presuppositions, their willingness to accept on principle propositions that seem on the face of them impossible. I don't think that's what faith is at all in some fundamental sense. I think faith is a form of courage. You know, if you're hurt by life, and you will be, it's understandable that you might react in a nihilistic and hopeless fashion and become anxious and depressed and cynical and bitter and all of that. That's a bad pathway. And I think part of what helps you through that is faith. And part of that faith is that it's incumbent upon you and actually in your best interest and everyone else's to maintain faith in the fundamental goodness of existence, including your own, despite the evidence to the contrary. Right? Because you can draw conclusions from suffering in two ways, right? One is that you have a duty and perhaps the capability to transcend the suffering and still serve the good, or you can derive the conclusion that life is so unbearable that it would be best terminated, which is the conclusion that Goethe's Mephistopheles derives, for example, in Faust. He says, well, the world is rife with suffering and it's so unbearable that consciousness itself, all beings, should cease to exist. That would be better. Nothing is better than something if something is rife with suffering. And you can derive that conclusion, and you'll be driven to it in some of the farther reaches of your life when terrible things happen to you. But I would say faith is the courage to not take that path despite the evidence that that might be justified. And so I think it is a form of courage in the highest sense. And I also think it is a redeeming form of courage. One of the things I told my daughter, who was very, very ill for a very long period of time and in tremendous pain and suffering the high probability of continued slow, painful, inevitable degeneration, was, do not let your illness, do not take advantage of your illness as an excuse. And I told her that when she was in grade 2. You know, it's no joke to tell someone that, because I knew she'd had every reason to be embittered. But I also knew that if she was, in combination with her illness, the two things might be worse than fatal. And, you know, if you don't think there are things that are worse than fatal, you have not suffered. Because there are things that are much worse than fatal.
This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're hearing excerpts from the 2022 commencement address at Hillsdale College from Dr. Jordan Peterson.
People have asked me, for example, I'm very opposed to the idea that the fundamental human motivation is power, which is pretty much what every student is taught at every level of their education, in every educational institution, except a handful now across your country. Fundamental motivation is power. There's no place for people of goodwill to meet and have and engage in constructive dialogue, dialogos, none of that, because our fundamental motivation is nothing but the will to power. And so there is no place for people of goodwill to meet. There is no such thing as dialogue. It's all a mask, a rationalization, a post hoc rationalization for pretension and power. It's such a dismal philosophy. It's so, you could not, and I believe this technically, you could not formulate a more pathological philosophy. It obliterates your faith in society, and it eradicates the notion of the individual. It removes the notion of good faith and goodwill, and it makes communication impossible. It's like, that's a temptation to engage in that sort of destruction as a consequence of your intellectual pretensions, let's say. And for all of you, this is going to face you too, this pretension, you know? So maybe you're not the hopeless type, and the temptation that assails you at the crossroads isn't your degeneration into a kind of faithless nihilism. Maybe it's a self-aggrandizement in some sense instead, and that you feel that now you have the opportunity to serve your own ambition. And there's really no difference between your future self and someone else, right? You know, if you're going to act ethically, and this is a very good way of thinking about acting ethically, you act in a way that works for you now, that works for you tomorrow, that works for you next week and next month and next year and in 5 years and in 10 years, and for you and your family and your friends and your broader community, and all of that simultaneously. And that's a place to find purpose in your life, to manage that balancing act simultaneously and to sacrifice your narrow, self-oriented pretensions, ambition, all of that, the celebration of your own intellect, the construction of your own empire for your own narrow purposes.
Finally, from Dr. Jordan Peterson's commencement address at Hillsdale College this year, he tells our graduates, no one is above what the church teaches.
And then there's service, civic service to your community. You know, I've been thinking about church lately. People have abandoned the churches and vice versa in many ways. And people think, you know, I can't believe what the church teaches. It's like, first of all, who cares what you believe?
Like, who are you anyways? Right? Well, really, it's like I'm 16. I don't like what the church teaches. Yeah, that's who you are. You're the judge of the church and you're 16. And that's like, that's commonplace. I know it's funny, but it's not, because that's a commonplace. So that was certainly me at 16. Who could believe that? You know, I'm above that. It's like, really? Here's this 15-year-old juvenile delinquent from northern Alberta, and it's like, who cares about St. Augustine anyways? You know, what did he know? Yeah, so civic duty. Well, I'm not going to go into politics because it's a snake pit, you know, or maybe you're cynical about social institutions. It's like, well, go fix them, right? You know, that'll give you something to do. If they're so wrecked, great. Well, it's an opportunity. You see something broken? Fix it. And then you're the person who fixes it. Like, good for you, man. It's like, you got something to do. Really? And then people think, hey, you're the guy that fixed that. Maybe you could fix this. And this, and this, and this, and then you fix things, and your life just expands, you know?
That's Dr. Jordan Peterson, and excerpts from his commencement address this year at Hillsdale College, titled At a Crossroads. You can find the full commencement address from Jordan Peterson on Hillsdale's YouTube page. Go to YouTube.com, search for Hillsdale College. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Adam Carrington from Hillsdale's Politics Department telling us about the Kennedy decision at the Supreme Court. Noah Rothman filled us in on his new book, The Rise of the New Puritans. Ken Calvert, professor of ancient history here at Hillsdale College, told us about the founding of Rome. And finally, we heard excerpts from the commencement address from Jordan Peterson. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including Noah Rothman this week, or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, and iHeart. Search for The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Email us, radiohour@hillsdale.edu. To find out more about Hillsdale College, head to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Veterans, did you know that Shasta County Veterans Service Office is open to all veterans who have served our nation? Whether a combat veteran or a member of the reserves with limited active duty time, you have earned benefits. If you have any military benefit or veteran-related questions, call 530-225-5616 or stop by Shasta County Veterans Service Office at 1855 Shasta Street, Redding, California. This message is brought to you by Korean War veteran Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary, California Veterans Affairs.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Redding has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Owens is a proud sponsor of Reading Colt 45's baseball. Owens provides top-quality respiratory products and services throughout the North State and Northern Nevada. Products include oxygen therapy featuring the small and portable oxygen concentrators, CPAP machines, and a team focused specifically on providing ongoing CPAP supplies to help you get the best sleep possible. Owens has been in business since 1979 and has been Joint Commission accredited since 2003, allowing them to care for patients in our community when they need them the most. Contact Owens at 1-800-MY-OWENS. That's 1-800-696-9367. KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Retirement may seem to be in the distant future, or it may suddenly arrive overnight. At Stifel Investments, we are committed to working closely with our clients. Planning tomorrow means understanding the challenges of today. Uncertain markets, rising costs, and longer lifespans. As a financial advisor of 25 years, I'm committed to helping my clients achieve retirement success. Let's get started today. This is Susan Eastman, Stifel Nicholas & Company, 244-7199.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.